Okay, so today we're doing a deep dive into a 1997 issue of Insectifera.
Okay.
It's a Swedish entomology journal.
Cool.
And, you might be thinking a whole, deep dive on just one journal issue.
Yeah.
But trust me on this one.
Okay.
This one is a gold mine, especially if you are interested in butterflies.
Absolutely.
This issue is like a total time capsule.
Yeah.
It gives us a snapshot of what was exciting Swedish entomologists back in 97.
Yeah.
And, some of these mysteries are still unsolved.
I love it.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's unpack this a little bit.
Okay.
We've got articles on railway construction worries,
Okay.
observations from China,
Interesting.
even a piece on iridescence and insects,
Yeah.
that kind of magical shimmer that some bugs have.
Right.
But the one that really caught my eye,
Yeah.
and I think you'll see why,
Yeah.
is the mystery surrounding a butterfly called Calais pontini.
Calais pontini is like the Bigfoot of the butterfly world.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it hasn't been spotted in like almost 150 years. 150 years.
Yeah.
It's wild.
It's a long time.
Okay, but before we get to our elusive butterfly friend,
Okay.
this journal gives us a really fantastic snapshot of Swedish entomology in the late 90s.
Yeah.
For example, there were discussions about choosing representative insects for different Swedish regions.
Oh, wow.
Can you imagine the debates that that must spark?
Right. It's more than just like picking a pretty bug.
Yeah.
You'd have to consider its ecological role,
Yeah.
its cultural significance. It really makes you think about the connection between people and
Yeah,
insects.
totally.
Yeah.
The journal also mentions an upcoming entomological meeting in Engeltofte.
Oh,
Can
cool.
you imagine a whole gathering
Yeah.
dedicated to discussing insect news and discoveries?
Oh, absolutely. These events are like the pulse of the field. You've got researchers sharing their findings,
Yeah.
debating new techniques.
Right.
It's where collaborations are born.
I love it.
Yeah.
Speaking of discoveries, the journal highlights articles by Klaas Kellander and Johan Hoyer
Okay.
on the 1996 butterfly season in Gästrikland.
Yeah.
Apparently, the region experienced a huge resurgence of butterfly populations.
Wow.
A butterfly boom can reveal a lot about an ecosystem's health.
Absolutely.
So this resurgence that Kellander and Hoyer documented,
Yeah.
what do you think sparked it? Was it a one-off, or is this indicative of larger trends that were happening in Gästrikland?
Right.
This is where the deep dive gets really interesting.
It certainly does.
Yeah.
And speaking of interesting, let's talk about Calais pontini,
Okay.
a butterfly shrouded in mystery.
Hmm.
The intrigue really revolves around a mere six specimens,
Six?
two in England, three in Sweden, and one whose location remains a complete unknown.
Six specimens.
Yeah,
That's it.
that's all we
No
got.
wonder it's so mysterious.
Right.
So, what makes these six so special?
Well, the mystery lies in the conflicting information about where they were originally collected. Some evidence points to near the Strait of Magellan in South America,
Okay.
while other accounts suggest Hawaii.
What?
Yeah.
Two incredibly distant
Right.
corners of the globe,
Yeah.
potentially linked by this single butterfly species.
It's true.
It's like a real-life game of entomological clue.
I like it.
Okay, so walk me through the evidence. What's
Okay.
got entomologists so stumped about this?
Okay. Well, we have Wallengren, a Swedish entomologist,
Okay.
who, based on his analysis, points to Hawaii, specifically Oahu, as the origin.
Right.
Then there's Butler, who named a potentially identical butterfly, Calais imperialis,
Okay.
and his work points to the Strait of Magellan.
Wait, so we might have two butterflies with different names
Potentially,
that are actually the same species.
he could be.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That just adds another layer to this mystery.
It certainly does. And here's where it gets even wilder.
Okay.
There were two individuals named J. Andersons involved in these expeditions, one on each.
Hold on, two guys with the same name.
I know.
Both on expeditions that could hold the key to this butterfly mystery.
It's wild.
Are you kidding me?
I
This
know.
is too good to be true.
Right.
Could they be the same person?
That was a prevailing theory for a while, adding a real whodunit element to the story. But unfortunately, further research debunked it. Still, the coincidence is fascinating.
Totally.
Yeah.
Okay, so if it wasn't our double J,
Yeah.
what other leads did the journal uncover?
Okay.
Where did they think this mysterious butterfly came from?
Well, that's where our deep dive takes a fascinating turn.
Okay.
The author of this Insectifera article proposes a new theory.
Okay.
What if the butterflies were actually collected on February 8th, 1852, uh-huh. at the mouth of the Bachelor River in South America?
The Bachelor River?
Yeah.
Why is that significant?
Because the Bachelor River aligns with the potential routes of both expeditions, making it a plausible alternative to the other location.
I love it. A brand new theory.
Right.
But if this Bachelor River theory is correct,
yeah.
why hasn't anyone seen this butterfly there
right.
or anywhere since?
You've hit upon the very heart of historical research.
Yeah.
Time has a way of obscuring the truth.
It really does.
It makes you wonder what other entomological mysteries are still out there.
It's really
just waiting to be rediscovered.
Like just waiting in the wings.
I know, right?
It really makes you think maybe there's a hidden clue in an old captain's logbook.
Right.
Or a long-lost diary entry.
Yeah.
Mentioning a beautiful, never-before-seen butterfly.
Wouldn't that be incredible?
That'd be amazing.
The possibility of its rediscovery out there in some remote corner of the world just waiting for a keen-eyed entomologist to find it?
Yeah.
It's a tantalizing thought.
You know what I find so captivating about this whole Clia spontanei situation?
Yeah.
Is that it really highlights how much we don't know about the natural world.
It's true.
It's humbling.
It really is. And it makes you wonder what other misidentified or misplaced specimens might be tucked away in the drawers of natural history museums around the globe.
Oh, wow.
Just waiting to rewrite scientific understanding.
Okay, that's actually blowing my mind a little bit.
Yeah.
Imagine a whole drawer full of misidentified butterflies.
Right.
Each one, a potential Clia spontanei waiting to be found.
Exactly. It's a good reminder that scientific understanding is an ongoing process.
Totally.
But let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Okay.
We still have a lot more to uncover in this 1997 issue of Insectifera.
Okay, let's do it.
Speaking of ongoing processes, this issue also delves into the impact of human activity on insect populations, particularly concerning a proposed railway construction project.
Right. This article about the railway really caught my attention.
Yeah.
What were they saying back then? What were their concerns?
Well, the article highlights worries about the potential disruption of a vital butterfly habitat. They even mentioned the resignation of Van Vierkant's chief, Monica Anderson, who was a strong advocate for environmental protection.
Oh, wow.
So it really underscores the tensions surrounding development and conservation.
Yeah.
Even back then.
It makes you wonder how those anxieties have or haven't evolved over time.
Yeah.
Are these like the same conversations that we're still having today, but maybe just with different players?
Mm.
What's interesting to me is how they connect this specific project to these larger transportation issues.
Absolutely. The author goes on to discuss the broader implications of railway expansion.
Okay.
You know, they touch upon affordability and the potential boost to tourism.
Right.
If train travel were more accessible, it's almost like they're anticipating the sustainable transportation conversations we're having today.
It's so fascinating to see those ideas kind of brewing back in 97.
I know.
But this issue wasn't just focused on Sweden.
Right.
There's a whole section on global entomological happenings.
Yeah.
Starting with Africa.
Okay.
What stood out to you there?
Well, there's this article about the changing political landscape in Congo, specifically the fall of Mobutu and the rise of a new leader, Kabila.
Okay.
And the author speculates on how this might impact entomological research.
Wow.
Especially for those studying butterflies.
That sounds like there was a real sense of anticipation.
Yeah.
Maybe even a little trepidation.
Yeah.
About what this change in leadership might mean for scientific exploration in the region.
Definitely. The article acknowledges that the complexities of the situation.
Yeah.
Particularly the impact of colonial borders on the African people.
Right.
They even suggest that dismantling those outdated boundaries.
Wow.
Might benefit the continent.
Mm.
A pretty bold statement for a scientific journal.
It really highlights how science is never separate from the political realities of the time.
Yeah.
And Congo wasn't the only place on their radar.
Right.
This issue also features an article about China.
Yes.
Right.
There's an intriguing piece by Claes Eliasson.
Okay.
Detailing his 1989 trip to China.
Wow.
Which is just a few years after the Tiananmen Square protests.
Right.
A period of intense political and social change.
Wow. Talk about an interesting time to be a scientist in China.
I know.
What was the focus of his trip?
Well, Eliasson's main interest was butterflies.
Okay.
He talks about his experience collecting specimens, which is apparently no easy feat.
Yeah.
due to the strict regulations.
Yeah.
He even recounts this rather humorous anecdote about a hotel maid discovering his butterfly collection spread out on his bed, leading to a costly encounter with the police.
A butterfly bust. That's hilarious.
It's a good story.
But seriously, it's a good reminder of the challenges that entomologists sometimes face.
It's true.
In the field, especially when navigating different cultural norms and regulations.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, this issue is full of such interesting stories.
I know.
What else caught your eye?
Well, there's this thought-provoking piece on a phenomenon known as interference in nature.
Okay.
Specifically, how it relates to the iridescent colors we see in some insects.
Oh, yes. Iridescence.
Yeah.
Like that stunning, almost metallic sheen that you see on some beetles and butterflies?
Exactly.
How do they make those colors?
It's all about the interplay of light and structure.
Mm.
The author, Jan Isidorsson, explains how the arrangement of microscopic scales on insect wings can create these vibrant, shifting colors.
Mm.
He draws parallels between the scales of morpho butterflies, those blue beauties from South America, and the wings of the Urania ripheus moth, considered by many to be one of the world's most beautiful insects.
I can only imagine how those colors must shimmer and change depending on the light.
I know.
Absolutely breathtaking.
Yeah.
Did he mention any other examples?
He talks about Tyndall blue,
okay,
which might be responsible for the blue we see in some butterflies, including some native to Sweden. And it's not entirely clear if Tyndall blue is the same as Rayleigh scattering, which is why the sky is blue, or if it has a different origin.
So even in a field as seemingly well-studied as entomology, there are still mysteries to be solved about something as fundamental as color.
Isn't that interesting?
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
Speaking of mysteries, this issue also delves into the history of entomology through the experience of Ragnar Östlund, a pioneering Swedish entomologist.
Cool.
And Östlund's work focused on the insect life around Gävle.
Yeah.
And it provides this really interesting glimpse into the early days of insect collecting.
It does.
And one passage that stood out to me was his description of a female butterfly laying her eggs on a nettle plant.
Oh, wow.
And he was completely captivated by it.
Hmm. That's really cool.
It's a good reminder that even the most common insect behaviors can be totally fascinating when you really stop to observe them.
I agree.
It's like rediscovering the magic in your own backyard.
Mm, totally.
What other fascinating behaviors did he write about?
Well, he talks about his experiments with breeding moths.
Okay.
Especially the peacock moth.
Cool.
He describes the excitement of witnessing their metamorphosis.
Yeah.
From caterpillars to those stunning winged creatures.
It never gets old, does it?
Never.
That
yeah.
magical transformation.
It's incredible.
Reading his account, you get this sense of a time when entomology was still such a young field, ripe with new discoveries.
It's true.
But let's get back to that central mystery in this journal issue.
Okay.
The case of the missing Calais plantae.
Okay.
We left off with a potential new lead.
Right.
So what did this article uncover?
Well, the author Göran Slöberg takes us on this deep dive.
Okay.
Into the voyage of the Swedish frigate Eugenie, which sailed around the world from 1851 to 1853.
Okay.
And they believe specimens of Calais plantae were collected during this expedition.
So we're back on the trail of the Eugenie.
I like it.
Tell me more about Suberg's investigation. What did he find?
Well, he really dug deep into the ship's logbooks and the scientific reports.
Cool.
And he discovered they contained numerous inconsistencies and ambiguities regarding the collection locations of various insects, including our mysterious butterfly.
Oh, wow. It's like a real-life game of telephone.
Right.
Only with crucial scientific data.
I know.
Did he find anything that could clear up some of this confusion?
Well, he points to the fact that the original description of Calais plantae, made by Wallengren in 1860, states that the specimens were collected in Honolulu in June and July of 1852.
Okay.
However, this location has been disputed by many, as no other Calais butterflies have ever been found in Hawaii.
Right. A Hawaiian Calais would be almost unbelievable.
It would be wild.
Yeah.
And to make matters even more complicated, another entomologist, Butler, described a potentially identical butterfly in 1871, which he named Calais imperialis, and he believed his specimens were collected near the Strait of Magellan in South America, a very different location from Hawaii.
Two butterflies.
Yeah.
Two names, Two completely different locations.
I know.
Makes your head spin.
It's a lot to keep track of.
So how did Schoberg try to make sense of it all?
Well, he proposes that maybe, just maybe,
yeah,
the butterflies were actually collected on February 8th, 1852,
uh-huh,
at the mouth of the Bachelor River in South America.
The Bachelor River.
Yeah.
It's like everything we've been discussing is suddenly converging.
Right. All roads lead to the Bachelor River.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a pretty convincing argument.
Yeah.
For the Bachelor River theory.
It's pretty compelling.
But if that's the case,
yeah,
why haven't any other specimens of Caius Pontani been found there or anywhere since?
That is the question that keeps entomologists up at night.
I bet.
You know, Schoberg acknowledges the lack of concrete evidence to definitively prove his theory, but he really emphasizes the need for further exploration and research in the region.
So the case of Caius Pontani remains open.
It seems that way.
A true entomological cold case.
Absolutely.
Really is like a detective story.
Yeah.
But speaking of mysteries, I noticed another intriguing article in this issue.
Okay.
This time about a spider.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You're talking about Asterius melanopygius.
Okay.
The black-rumped spider?
The black-rumped spider.
Yeah. And while it might not have the same, like, glamorous ring as a lost butterfly,
right,
its story is just as fascinating.
Okay, you've got my attention.
Okay.
What's so special about this black-rumped spider?
Well, this spider is a globetrotter.
Mm-hmm.
Its range extends across continents, from New Zealand, where it was first discovered, to South America, Hawaii, Australia, Japan.
Wow.
Even remote islands in the Atlantic and Indian Oceans.
We're talking about a seriously well-traveled spider.
Yeah.
How did this tiny creature manage to get around so much?
It's a combination of factors, really.
Okay.
Ethan, activities like shipping and trade certainly played a role.
Right.
But this spider is also a natural traveler.
Okay.
In its juvenile stage, it can actually balloon through the air using silk threads.
So these little guys are basically launching themselves into the wind.
Pretty much.
Wow.
Yeah.
And seeing where they land.
Exactly.
Genius.
It's good strategy.
But if it's been around for so long,
yeah,
and is so widespread, why is this particular journal article focusing on it in 1997?
Because this spider, with its taste for compost heaps and quiet demeanor,
okay,
had only recently been discovered in Europe.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was first spotted in Finland in 1975.
Okay.
And since then, it's quietly spread to other parts of Europe, even reaching high altitudes in the Alps.
Wow.
And the Carpathian Mountains.
That's a pretty impressive feat.
It is.
For a spider that most people have probably never even heard of.
I know, right? It's a quiet achiever.
So it makes you wonder, what's the impact of a newcomer like this?
Oh,
on existing ecosystems.
Absolutely. And while it might seem harmless enough,
right,
its long-term effects on European ecosystems are still an open question.
Hmm.
You know, will it compete with native spiders,
yeah,
or disrupt delicate food webs?
Right.
These are the kinds of questions that ecologists are grappling with all the time.
It's a good reminder that even seemingly small changes in biodiversity,
yeah,
can have these big ripple effects.
It's true.
What I find fascinating is like how we study those ripples.
Yeah.
Did the article talk about how researchers actually track the spread of something like this spider?
They did touch on the methods used.
Okay.
Emphasizing the importance of careful observation,
right,
and meticulous data collection.
Hmm.
It's a slow process, but vital if we want to understand this complex web of life on Earth.
This has been such an insightful deep dive.
It has been fun.
Amazing how a single issue of a scientific journal,
I know,
can offer such a rich tapestry of stories. We've covered discoveries and debates, human impacts and ecological mysteries.
Yeah.
All connected by this shared fascination.
It's true.
With the insect world.
I've loved it.
Yeah, me too. And as we wrap up our exploration of this 1997 issue of Insectifera,
yeah,
it makes you wonder what other entomological treasures are hidden away.
Right.
In libraries and archives just waiting to be rediscovered and spark our curiosity anew.
It's a good reminder that the pursuit of knowledge is never truly finished.
Mm.
You know, there are always new discoveries to be made, new connections to be drawn, and new mysteries to unravel.
Holy.
Even within the pages of a decades-old journal.
That's so true. Well, thank you so much for joining me on this deep dive.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
It's really got me thinking about what's out there just waiting to be discovered.
Yeah, me too.